This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Noelle Lim. Riding on the semiconductor wave, MI Technovation has more than doubled its value from early 2020. In the last few years, it's delivered double-digit profit before tax margin, sales growth and return on equity on the back of very low gearing. Is this a semicon play to watch out for? MI Technovation designs and manufactures wafer-level chips package and sorting machine with testing capabilities. These chips are typically used in smartphones like the iPhone. As component parts become finer and therefore more brittle, they require advanced inspection. We speak with Oh Kwan Eng, the group CEO, on the company's prospects. Thank you for making time for us. MI Technovation is now worth about 3 billion ringgit, and for it to reach 4 billion ringgit or break that 1 billion US dollar mark, you need to bump up sales by, say, about 1.5 times conservatively. What does it take to make this happen?
So we are well planned for our growing directions in four key business units. So the first one is the semiconductors equipment business unit, which is named the brand under MI Equipment. So this subsidiary or this business unit, they are focused in the equipment making for produce, design and produce the equipment for semiconductor industry. We have MI Equipment in Malaysia, Penang, the largest subsidiary. They are producing the die sorting equipment since day one. So we will continue to invest and enlarge this subsidiary in Malaysia. And we are coming out with our Korea subsidiary, MI Equipment Korea. They are focused on very high-end products that doing the LAB for the those 7 nanometers wafer, which is required localized heat up and do the interconnect. So we have a team in Korea to design and produce these equipment. And we have another subsidiary in Taiwan. That's MI Equipment Taiwan. This subsidiary in Taiwan is focused on all the inspections and as well as especially the wafer level inspections and those are invisible light inspections technologies. And the last subsidiary in China, Suzhou, we are moving to a bigger factory end of this year. So they are focused on those final test equipments on technology for the semiconductor industry. We are not only focused on one single product, and we are growing to a multiple product and cover the entire as much as possible for the semiconductor industries. And this, when all these subsidiaries, they are starting to contribute to the revenues and the products matured as similar to MI Equipment Malaysia, located in Penang, then we can see that we can achieve the target that we want for the semicon on the revenue that we are target to make ourselves to reach a billion company.
For these four businesses, what are the synergies? How does it help you fortify your position?
So we need to make ourselves to go to a more high values process or the equipment product. So we set it in Taiwan and Korea to make more advanced equipment, which is that able to do other process. So our customers, like AAC, when they buy our die sorting, at the same time, we can offer them our inspection, those are wafer inspection equipment built and designed in Taiwan, and we can offer them our LAB machines that built and designed in Korea, as well as our fine pitch test platform designed and built in China. So means that we cover more processes in the entire semiconductor industry.
So you're investing in like the next generation technology. What does this next generation technology support is meant to support?
To a certain extent, we may be able to disclose like we are going towards more 7 nanometers, 5 nanometers, and 3 nanometers, the kind of wafer fab technologies. Actually, you want to do a 5G. You want to don't have the lagging, and you want to transmit a huge volume of the data. You need to make sure that the connection is very stable, fast enough.
It seems to me you are quite heavy on the inspection side. So in terms of product range or maybe in terms of investments, what more do you need to add to your portfolio to further strengthen your position?
In the semiconductor firm, they divide in two groups. One is the IDMs, like what those like Broadcom, Qualcomm, Qorvo, Skyworks, AMD, Intel, all these people, they are IDM or fabless. They are designed IC or they build the IC, they have their own fab. And the others, a group is those OSATs, those foundry like the TSMC, UMC, Grover Foundry, and also the ASC, Amkor, Spill, and all these key players. And all these three players, I would say that they are very concentrated in Northeast Asia, like Taiwan, Korea, China, as well US, or Singapore, some of them in Singapore. So we need to get close to them and knowing and work closely with the new products, introductions, where is their directions. So we can align with their directions and we make sure that those investments we put in and those product that we're building today actually will turn to and materialize in the next few years or 5 years or 10 years. Means that we are looking at the future technology. We are not just blindly invest and do what we know today.
So you are really supporting the OSAT players like the likes of the TSMC. I noticed the industry is going through quite some interesting changes. Just the headlines, for example, Apple plans to design chips for the Mac computer. And then also like Microsoft and Amazon seems to be very interested in the chip making business as well. NVIDIA is buying ARM. So given this kind of changes or this kind of developments, and as well as advancements in IoT, smart manufacturing, consumer robots, how does this reshape the chip making industry and how does that affect you?
Looking at the 7 nanometers wafer, but when we are handling this our wafer and with the chips that built under the 7 nanotechnologies, the interconnects or the method of doing the interconnect is not going to use the traditional deep fluid ovens. They probably need to use the laser assisted bonding, the LAB, and we are developing the LAB machine in Korea, and we come out our models called G-Lab that we are start in the OSAT, the tier one OSAT for evaluations together with the IC design house.
Now, Malaysia appears to be your biggest base, but you've earmarked investments to set up a center in Taiwan, China and Korea, and you've also said it a few times, emphasizing that the need to be in Taiwan and Korea to be close to your customers. Which country do you eventually foresee will be your biggest base for maybe in the 5 to 10 years time?
I would say that Malaysia, Taiwan, and Korea and China are equally important because they are focused on the different processes. Distance that from Taiwan to Korea and China are much closer compared from Malaysia to all these three countries. So I would say that our presence in Taiwan is pretty important because that the majority of the wafer fab are located in Taiwan.
China is a far bigger market, and China has this made in China policy now where they want to make crucial parts in China. And that might mean also your customers might want you to have a bigger presence in China. Furthermore, you know, you are trying to build products that will support 5G, but Malaysia is not going to have the infrastructure for 5G until 2022. And we know, time is money, right? And with the race religious rhetoric that will remain a perpetual and prominent narrative in our system, why would Malaysia still be a big center for you?
Even not myself and the whole industry and all the semiconductor players, we will not put everything in the same basket. Then we look at among the Southeast Asians, Malaysia, to a certain extent, they are equal. It's very good for the, the semiconductor industry is they have the required know-how, the human resource. The second thing is the cost of the operations is much lower. It may be not the lowest, but it is value for money. when the you are invest in Malaysia, then you can have the access to Thailand, Philippines, Singapore, and the rest of the country. So, and directly, it is quite a balanced locations.
Like you mentioned, Malaysia has that incumbent know-how. But now with China pursuing that Made in China policy and the government is throwing money to give money to companies to upskill and to, you know, to start making parts, how soon would the Chinese close the gap with Malaysians in terms of this incumbent know-how?
So we're more looking at the collaboration and the synergy of our subsidiary in Malaysia, in Taiwan, in Korea, and China. Then we are working as a team, then how we're sharing the information and sharing the technologies, then to able to fulfill or to service our customers in a global basis. Within our 10-year roadmap, we will still keep our head office in Penang, Malaysia.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we're speaking with Oh Kwang Ing, the Group CEO of MI Technovation, a semiconductor player with plants in Malaysia, China, Taiwan and South Korea. After this, we'll ask him about the implications of the US-China trade war. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Noelle Lim. On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we're speaking with Oh Kwang Ing, the Group CEO of MI Technovation, a semiconductor player. Taiwan is a key center for you. And with what's going on with the US-China trade war and the fact that Joe Biden's likely to maintain pressure on China, how confident are you that the US will not extend its ban to suppliers based in Taiwan as well?
What we are doing is assume the worst case that to China by itself, it just closed the door. No one can export anything in. They cannot export anything out. Besides the Malaysia, the Penang, China is our second large. Why we want to make China is bigger in terms of manufacturing capacities and in the and also the R&D teams bigger than Taiwan and Korea, is because that we already prepared in case that we are not able to export in our equipment from Taiwan or China or Korea or Malaysia, we can produce it in China. For the US customer, we have the office in San Diego, California. Okay, for manufacturing activity, we do not see and we're not thinking that the manufacturing activity in US will be going to be growth significantly, even though there's a trade war and the new president that still continues to have giving pressure to the China. But we don't think that they will move all the business or the manufacturing activity, because business still business. The most important thing is that you need to make sure that your cost is lowest and your selling margin is highest to make the biggest benefit from your business manufacturing activity. So I don't think that in the short term they will grow in this way. But anyhow, we can supply our die sorting machine from Penang, Malaysia to US. We have no problem on that. Or our LAB machine in Korea to US.
So you've earmarked 45 million ringgit to establish centers in Taiwan, China and Korea. That roughly works out to be about 60% of your land and building valuation in Malaysia. So do you plan to invest more than 45 million ringgit, say from 5 to 10 years onwards?
I think the highest will be in China, followed by Malaysia, then Taiwan and Korea. So Korea, we are more keeping as a more high technology development centers, but less manufacturing activities. The reason behind is the unit price, selling price, average selling price for the product in Korea is very high, but the volume is not high. So it means that high value, low volume kind of product in Korea. So because of the cost of operations in Korea is high compared to China and Taiwan.
Your wife is also the chief financial officer of the company. Now, of course, I'm not questioning her professional competence, but optics-wise for a public listed company, and you know, from a minority investor's perspective, it does not look really good. Like, you're the CEO and your wife is the CFO in charge of the purse string. Are there plans for another person to take over this role eventually?
Ms. Seung, she is a qualified accountant and graduate from the University of Malaya. Okay, so to a certain extent, she know the entire business from day one until today and been doing a good job in the past 10 years since she's involved in this business. But definitely when we are growing to a more complicated business structures with our new like acquisitions of the Taiwan firms coming into the pictures, that the volume and also the know-how, it may not we may going to looking for someone that from overseas with that abilities to handle a multi products, multiple business units.
66% of your workforce is men, mainly in the technical side. Why is the ratio so imbalanced?
That is not something that we can control, as we are not able to encourage or to force those ladies to take up the engineering course. But you look at the engineering faculty in all the university, about 90% are male. If they say there's no such supply or the human resources for us to pick up, then there's no reason that we just want to have a balance of 50% male, 50% female. So we just acquire according to this ratio. There's no reasons. We must look at the best benefit of the company. Is this person able to fit the job or not, and able to deliver or not? We should, regardless of the gender or the races and all this.
Yeah, so I do understand that it should be results-driven, outcomes-driven, and the best person for the job, lah, regardless gender. I think that thinking has served us quite well. Now we talk about things like ESG, environment, social governance, more diversity. I know people kind of think like, is this diversity thing like, you know, just a politically correct thing? But there's actually an upside in looking at diversity and being quite intentional about it. The reason is sometimes we are so driven by some very old metrics that we may not realize that maybe we need to broaden our metrics. Maybe women may not bring in certain things like what we conventionally expect of an engineer, but they may bring in other things. So I wonder whether, you know, this is an opportunity to kind of rethink what is your recruitment criteria, and then to be more intentional to say, are we being too narrow in our recruitment criteria?
So I think for us, okay, for MI Technovations, we look at the birth gender is fair across male or females, that as long as you have that kind of capability, we have very good engineers, is a females. Okay. And we also have a very good accountant, he's a male. So we, regardless of what gender they are, we actually do not have that kind of restrictions.
Your parents were farmers and not highly educated. Your father only completed primary school. And you were a first-class honours, mechanical engineering, which means probably one of the top students in UM. You're worth like about 1.8 billion ringgit. People always say the studious type, the more academically inclined, may not be able to make good entrepreneurs, but you managed to cross that bridge. And how do you do that?
I believe that is coming from the genes. As once you born, the gene already pre-coded on what you are going to be and how your thinking models, how you think, and during the primary or secondary or university times, then you just perform or execute according to those code already printed in your gene. So. But farmer also then is a businessman. They grow and they sell it, and there's a businessman. So probably this portion that is actually giving me a little bit of ideas to be a businessman, and could be a much better, interesting things to be a worker. So every time when I was young and very small at times, My father sell the sugar cane or the sweet potatoes to the buyer, to the shop. Then he start collecting the money and counting the money. Oh, that pictures could be very interesting. You have the chance to count the money. Maybe a lot of people will have this ideas that when you are good in economics, maybe you are not very good in the businessman. To a certain extent, it is true. This is not the mathematical model. That's not the formula. Okay. I think regardless whether you are good in, we can see that there's a lot of very successful entrepreneurs. I mean, doing something good in my business, but it's not like I'm the best. I think there's many people that have been doing very good. We cannot using our personal wealth to measure it. And somebody is doing very good in the social responsibilities. They are doing very good to protect the environments. They are putting up their whole life to taking care of those wild animals, those going to these things. And they are doing a very good job, and they are a very smart and successful person as well.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us. We just spoke with Oh Kwang Eng, the Group CEO of MI Technovation. I'm Noel Lim on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.